Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, FOMO Sapiens. This is the final of our best of episodes before we launch into season 10 next week. Now, I chose a real, humdinger of an episode featuring Greg McEwen. And he wrote a book that is sort of a, you know, just a very well-referenced, well-loved, successful book called Essentialism, all about figuring out what the heck we want to do with our lives, what's important, what's not. And I was just reading this interesting book called From Founder to CEO by Matt Mokry, and he talks a lot about Greg's work. So, you know, he's had real influence on people. Now, Greg did me a little bit of a solid, and we had him on the show again to talk about this, is that he, his second book, which is called Effortless, starts with my story. So I was really honored to be in the book, and Greg didn't tell me he was going to put me there. And when I got the book and I opened it, I almost fell on the floor. It was nuts. So this is a great episode for anybody who wants to figure out what's important and what to focus on. You're going to love it. You're going to love Greg. And I will see you next week for the season premiere of FOMO Sapiens Season 10.
Tudo bem, meus queridos FOMO Sapiens? Now, that right there was Portuguese. And as you know, I love speaking foreign languages. But I'm not alone. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off that list with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Now, FOMO Sapiens, you know I speak 4 languages, and it takes work to stay on top of them, especially with French. C'est difficile. But with Babbel, I'm able to practice practical conversations that I can actually use in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/FOMO. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FOMO. That's spelled BABBEL.com/FOMO. Rules and restrictions may apply. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, or delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you improve efficiency by bringing all major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. And with rising prices everywhere you look, you gotta do the math and save money. Good news, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. So head over to netsuite.com/FOMO. That's netsuite.com/FOMO. netsuite.com/FOMO.
FOMO.
If someone wants to spend 10 seconds applying essentialism, you know, like the first 10 seconds, I think it's this. They just stop. They can do it right now. You know, close their eyes. Breathe. And just ask, what's important now? And go after that. Just move towards that in the next action. I mean, that's like the 10-second test of essentialism.
That's Greg McEwen, author of the New York Times bestseller Essentialism and host of the new podcast Essentialism. I'm your host, Patrick McGinnis, and this is FOMO Sapiens, part of the HBR Presents Network. We live in a world of overwhelming options, and whether you're an entrepreneur, an executive, or just someone who wants to make the most out of your time and money, committing to just one thing can feel impossible. That's called FOMO, and it's short for fear of missing out. How do I know? Because I coined the term. Welcome to FOMO Sapiens, the show where I ask entrepreneurial thinkers how they make personal and professional decisions in a world of overwhelming choice.
FOMO.
FOMO. Right now, a lot of us are going back to basics, and FOMO. You can see that in how we spend our money. The World Economic Forum just took a look at how consumer spending has changed in the last few months in places like the United States, Brazil, India, China, and South Korea. And here's what they found. No matter where you go in the world, spending on skincare, makeup, and apparel is way down, while spending on groceries and household supplies is exploding. And that makes sense. You don't need to put on makeup to watch Netflix in your pajamas. Now, interestingly, South Korea led the world with the highest percentage of people who plan to spend more money in the next couple of months on two specific categories, and those are takeout food and entertainment like movies, TV shows, and video games. And I gotta be honest, just thinking about all that takeout, Netflix, and video games over in South Korea is giving me some FOMO. Now, it goes without saying that just as we are reassessing how we spend our money, we're also rethinking how we spend our time, and we're reconsidering what matters most to us. And right now is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to think about what really matters to you and what doesn't. Put another way, it's a great moment to think about what is truly essential to you and what is basically non-essential. And that's why I invited Greg McKeown, the author of the instant classic New York Times bestseller Essentialism, to tell us all how to do that. Greg's a Stanford MBA graduate who has dedicated his career to studying why some people and teams break through to the next level while others don't. And he defines his approach to life, which is called Essentialism, as a disciplined, systematic approach to determining where our highest point of contribution lies, then making execution of those things almost effortless. The way of the Essentialist is the path to being in control of one's own choices. It is a path to new levels of success and meaning. Now, Greg is a super thoughtful guy, and you're going to love what we talk about in our conversation. And by the way, I'm also on the latest episode of Greg's Essentialism podcast, talking all about FOMO. So head over there, find the episode on your favorite place to get podcasts, and take a listen. And then stick around for the FOMO moment of the show, where I'm going to share something that I learned this week from a former guest of the show that actually changed the way I think. It's been in my head all week, and it's all about how you change yourself. It's kind of unconventional, but I think it will resonate with you and get you thinking about changing your own life. And now onto the interview. To start our conversation, I wanted to make sure I fully understood the essence of essentialism. So I asked Greg, the man who created it, to explain to me exactly what is essentialism.
The key to essentialism is in the word. It's about asking, is this essential? To use that as a lens through which to evaluate all these options, opportunities, all of this noise, all of these voices, internal and external, and to be exploring through all of that in search of the few things, the vital few things that really matter. And to then, once we identify those things, reduce or even entirely eliminate the non-essentials, the things that are less important, and to then build a system that makes it as easy as possible to actually do and to live by those things that are very important. That's what essentialism is. That's its reason for being.
So let's take kind of a hypothetical. Tell me about either a real person or sort of an archetype of a person that is living without those principles, that is living with the non-essentials, and then paint me a picture of what essentialism looks like when put into practice.
Non-essentialism is the default position for a lot of people. The litmus test questions for whether somebody is a non-essentialist include, have you ever found yourself busy but not productive? Have you ever found yourself stretched too thin at work or at home or both? Do you often feel your life being hijacked by other people's agenda for you? If you answer yes to any of those or all of those, then the chances are you are living as a non-essentialist. Even though almost certainly you've never deliberately chosen that, you've just gone along, you've just done what other people are doing, and that's the norm of our times, is to operate in that way. And so all of a sudden, the first aha moment is to say, oh, that's a strategy and I've been choosing it. Is there an alternative? Could there be a different way to do this? Could there be actually a way that's both gentler, less likely to burn you out, but also an opportunity to break through to a higher point of contribution because you're focused on the few things that matter and are investing more of your time and energy and resources into those things, you're able to make more progress and enjoy that journey more than the alternative. The value proposition of essentialism is that you can do fewer things, but do them better so that you get more from the experience and just simply better results. You're not trying to do more things. You're just trying to do more of the right things.
So you mentioned, you use the word decision. Somebody decides to live non-essentially. And I'm curious, is that what's really happening? Are we deciding to choose a path that actually gives us less fulfillment? Or is the world conspiring to have us live this way? Or is it, you know, where is the decision voluntary versus this is something involuntary that's kind of happening to us as a result of living in the world in which we live?
I think it's both conscious and unconscious. But I still think regardless, it's a decision. I think that waking up to the reality that you cannot not choose, that really one of the most inviolate truths is that we always, always have the power of choice, is one of the awakenings of becoming an essentialist. That you realize that actually, yes, you have been choosing the way of the non-essentialist. Not consciously, fine. Maybe because other people have been conspiring. Yes, I subscribe to many examples that that is true. But it doesn't make them less of a choice just because I've done them without realizing it or done them without thinking about it. The discovery that that you can take away anything but that, you know, the last of the human freedoms, to now quote Viktor Frankl, is the ability to choose one's own way in response to any other circumstance. So to have an awakening around that actually is, the, I think, one of the very spark points, launch pads for the journey of an essentialist. I can choose. I can choose something different. I can make a different choice. I can say yes when other people are saying no. I can say no when other people are saying yes. When other people think they only have the choice of yes or no, I can choose to negotiate. And to really discover that, I taught that to our children and was delighted, just delighted when one of them used it. Oh, I suppose it sounds a little bit like they used it against me. I was trying to persuade one of my daughters, she was 14, to read a book on this particular day. She loves to read. There's no big deal about that. But I don't know. It might have been Man's Search for Meaning for all I remember. It was a book that could be read in one day that I thought was meaningful, and I was trying to persuade her to do it. And she had other things that she was working on, and so she pushed back, not unpolitely, but I came to my office, and she slipped a note under my door, and I have it here. It's been laminated now. But listen to this. This is what she writes. She says, "I already expressed my unwillingness to read this book, but I'm happy to make a counteroffer. I am not willing to read it all in one day today, but I'd be happy to explore the possibility of reading it in the future over the course of a few weeks. I believe it would be best to wait till the end of my literature assignment. If you would like me to read this book in place of a separate assignment and over the course of a few weeks, I'm sure that can be made possible."
Wow. I get it. Well, what I love about that is she clearly read Essentialism first. And then came back with a very convincing argument, by the way. I mean, you know, one of the things that we talk about on this show all the time is making choices, and she gives you a set of very acceptable choices that you can then choose from.
That's right. And in terms of, I mean, we both, Anna and I both work really hard to create a certain kind of culture in our home so that this wouldn't be an absurd moment for us anyway. But in addition to that, when I travel, about 80% of the time, I'll bring one of my children with me. And so as an unintended consequence of that, they have attended lots of essentialism events, and they participate in those events, and they answer questions in those events. And so they have had many exposures to the idea from a young age. I don't even know if that's what was going on in this case. I don't think, again, that it necessarily was a deliberate choice, but it was still a choice, and she'd been exposed to this idea so that at some level she was aware that she had this choice. I don't just have to give a polite yes or a rude no. And so here, even as a 14-year-old, is able to articulate, let's have a negotiation. Let's have a conversation. And I thrilled in that moment. I delighted in that moment. Even as it happened, I wasn't frustrated. I thought, this is what I want for all of my daughters. I want them to feel like they have a voice in the world, that they can not just take it or leave it, fight or flight. No, you can negotiate. You can talk. You can find a better way forward in search of what actually is essential.
Okay. So, Greg, obviously, you came here knowing the show is called FOMO Sapiens. So I'm going to ask you a question I've been looking forward to asking you, which is, what does FOMO have to do with essentialism?
Well, FOMO, this fear of missing out, this concern about what everybody else is doing, is one of the forces that makes non-essentialism such a default position, and why essentialism is even needed in the world. It's become so normalized that we know about so many people doing so many things. And in some cases, we are learning about people in such an exaggerated form, such a selective, curated story. It's almost like we're just hearing people lie about their lives. So if we use the same criteria that we used even 10 years ago, we're going to be not just have information overload, but opinion overload. And so we've got to make a bigger adjustment than is obvious at first. Because there's been such a huge shift, such a big new set of temptations for traditional human weakness, we need to have a similar sort of shift within us as we become much more selective about which voices to listen to. Yeah. Who are the wisdom sources we actually want to absorb into our lives? Which stories that other people are sharing are stories we want to adopt ourselves rather than just, you know, watch them and observe them from a distance? So I think that FOMO creates part of the tapestry, this chaotic tapestry that essentialism is attempting to sort out and to clarify for people.
So, Greg, last year I was traveling and I went to Turkmenistan. It was the first time in a long time where I was in a place where there was no FOMO. There is very little internet. People don't have social media. It's against the law. And so that, you know, that external influence of social media and technology is such a driver of FOMO these days. And as I think about essentialism, I kind of ask myself the same question. Is it sort of a tech-enabled, developed country kind of thing, or is it something that we can find in every corner of the earth?
I think we're going to find it in every corner of the earth. I think it is exacerbated in a particular set of ways through the evolving social media, because obviously that's not even one thing. It's many, many different things, and it's being constantly tested. Mark Zuckerberg was being interviewed by Reid Hoffman and described how every day on Facebook there are 10,000 Facebooks because it's operating in a way that's constantly learning. So almost any engineer can test in a small market, 10,000 people, this new trick, this new approach. It means that it's evolving constantly. And I think it's reasonable to conclude it's evolving much faster than we are and much more deliberately. And so, again, this is why we need to be adapting our game in what might at first feel quite extreme, where you just say, look, essentialism isn't one more thing. It's a different way of seeing everything. You're opting for a much more deliberate and selective life. And immediately, almost immediately, this can pay dividends.
So if we want to do this, and, you know, I think a lot of people who are listening, and I've certainly felt that way myself, feel overwhelmed sometimes. It's like, I have all these good things I'm doing, but it's so much that
it's hard to see the good in it right now. So if we want to apply this to our own lives, obviously we'll read the book, but where can we start today to start putting this into practice in our lives?
If someone wants to spend 10 seconds applying essentialism, you know, like the first 10 seconds, I think it's this. They just stop. They can do it right now. You know, close their eyes. Breathe. And just ask, what's important now? And go after that. Just move towards that in the next action. I mean, that's like the 10-second test of essentialism. And that's true at the very beginning, and it's true for, you know, someone who's a master essentialist after 10 years. It's the same test. It's to come back into this moment, work out what matters right now, and step towards it.
And so what's that for you?
I mean, literally right now, it's having this conversation. It's being here and being fully present. That's a good test of being an essentialist, is if you can be present with the person you're talking to now and feel that this, what is being done currently, is important. And if you find yourself too often coming into the moment and asking that question and feeling, well, it's not this. What's important right now is not what I'm doing currently, then it's a good test of how essential your life is in its current design.
Greg, if we want to get into that place, what are some decisions that we can make, some changes that we can make starting today that'll prepare us mentally, environmentally even, for essentialism?
I mean, one of those things is to create a room at home that has no technology. Okay, just remove all of those distractions. Another thing somebody can do is take a nap, because protecting the asset by taking a power nap is more than just, well, that's a nice to have. It's key to discerning what really matters. When we sleep 4 hours a night, it's the same as if we're psychologically and physiologically drunk. That's the effect it's having on executive function within our brains. So just sleeping can be restorative, not just to the body, or not even primarily to the body, but to the mind and to the heart, so that we can see clearly what we should be doing and what we shouldn't.
Now, in order to maintain this focus and commitment over a longer period of time, you advocate for us to step back on a quarterly basis, sort of like doing an offsite with yourself, I guess, in a personal planning meeting in which you think about your priorities and you change them if you need to. So what does doing that achieve?
You really have a look at your life and you say, well, what's working, what's not? And you come out, well, really with this, you say, okay, let's say there's three areas of contribution. There's contribution to yourself, right? Protecting the asset. That's the label that I'm giving to it. Then you have family and your most important relationships. And then the third area is quite big and broad. It's other, everything else. And I think in that personal quarterly offsite, you can choose, let's say, no more than 7 projects that you're going to do over the next quarter. So these are goals, really, but they're goals with a deadline, with an end point. You can check these off. You can complete them. And you can choose how to put those 7 projects, like, you know, like chips in poker or something. You've got 7 chips. Where do you put them? You could put them all on protecting the asset. That is a possibility. I don't think I've ever done that, but you could do it that way. Typically, I'll have 1 or 2 in protect the asset, you know, 1, 2, or 3 in family, and then 1, 2, or 3 in everything else. And I literally have this. I mean, I'm not just talking about it. I have it on a big, right here on my desk, in fact, 11 by 17 sheet, do it Sharpie. And so this is something I then look at every day and every week when I'm doing my cadence of planning meetings, first personal planning meetings, then family planning meetings and business planning meetings. Yes, I mean, maybe it all sounds like a lot, but what you're doing is so justifiable, because only a few things are essential and they're so disproportionately valuable. They're worth all this, you know, this extra time to find out what those things are and to organize around them. Because really, it's like waking up and discovering that we're not in a, you know, we're not in a coal mine like we always thought, where it was just productivity, trying to get as much from point A to point B. But actually, we're trying to, we're in a diamond mine. We're trying to find those essential few things that are disproportionately valuable. As soon as you get that mindset, as soon as you see life through that lens, you start to automatically take time to reflect.
So you've now been talking about this book, living this life, talking to people who have put your work into effect in their own lives to change their lives. And the example that you gave earlier of the doctor. And I'm curious, one thing that's been interesting for me is, you know, I had a book come out 4 years ago. I have a new one out. And every time I meet with an audience, I usually learn something new. And maybe I think about something a little differently than I did before. So in the last 6 years, what have you learned that has maybe changed your mind about essentialism or taught you something new that you hadn't thought of before? What was the something that really for you stuck out?
There's two things. The first is that I wish I could have expressed more clearly this negotiation space, that it's not just about elimination in what could feel like quite a cold interaction where you're just going, well, no, I'm not going to do that. It's not so much that I think people have just gone along and said no to everything, although some people have. It's that for a lot of people, that's just so out of reach for them that it can make it feel a bit unrealistic. And I'm always keen to point out to people that I neither wrote nor advocated nor believed you ought to start saying no to everyone and everything without really thinking about it. You know, that would be a book called Noism. And the book I wrote was Essentialism. So it's about leaning into the big yeses. But also, I think that people do need the skills to be able to negotiate, to be able to create that psychological safety, to be able to have these conversations, to recognize that it's going to take a few conversations to work out what matters. So I think that would be the main thing I would want to enrich the book Essentialism with, so that people recognize that that's really the walk of the essentialist, is to be engaged in that negotiation.
All right. The book and the podcast are Essentialism, and the website is gregmcewen.com. Thanks again for being here, Greg.
It's my pleasure.
FOMO.
If you like today's show, please be sure to rate it and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me on Instagram at Patrick J. McGinnis, on Twitter at PJ McGinnis, and on the web at FOMOSapiens.com or PatrickMcGinnis.com, where you can get all kinds of free resources to live a more decisive and entrepreneurial life. FOMO Sapiens is recorded in New York City. Theme music is by Mike McGinnis, and editing and post-production is by Josh Elstro. If you like today's show, please be sure to rate it and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me at FOMOSapiens.com and at PatrickMcGinnis.com. To advertise on FOMO Sapiens, reach out to contact@FOMOSapiens.com. FOMO.